Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Muslim Ban conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Esther Sung from the National Immigration Law Center. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Bree. Good morning, everyone. I'm Esther Sung, a staff attorney with the National Immigration Law Center. Thank you for joining us. As you know, we've just filed a new lawsuit against the Trump administration, PARS Equality Center versus Pompeo, in which we're challenging the way that the Trump administration has implemented the waiver provision in the Muslim travel ban. So we have a couple of speakers who will provide some information about the lawsuit and why we're bringing it. Let me first introduce my friend and colleague, Elika Vafai, a staff attorney at Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Asian Law Caucus, and also a representative of the Iranian American Bar Association. Elika?
Good morning. Thank you everyone for being on the call. As Esther mentioned, this lawsuit challenges the implementation of the Muslim travel ban, which has been in effect since December of 2017 and became the permanent law of the land after the Supreme Court decision on June 26th in Trump v. Hawaii. The decision has been devastating for our communities since December, and the ban is a discriminatory and terrible policy, but it is the law of the land at this point. And so the question now and this lawsuit is focusing on that aftermath and how it's being implemented. This suit does represent individuals from all of the Muslim majority countries that are impacted by the ban, and they're individuals that come from many different walks of life and are at different stages of their immigration processes. But all of them have been impacted by the chaotic, unlawful implementation of the waiver section of the ban, Section 3C. That text promises, and the ban basically promises that all cases will be considered on a case-by-case basis for a waiver, and that individuals should have the opportunity to present information and to request that waiver. The waiver is potentially granted based on three requirements: that the applicant can show that they would face undue hardship if they're not granted the waiver and the visa, that there is not a threat to national security and no criminal issues, and that it would be in the interest of the U.S. for admission. However, what we've been seeing on the ground from December is quite a different process. In fact, no process. Individuals are unable to demonstrate how they qualify for a waiver. There is no mechanism or paperwork or process in place. And in fact, the guidance that the ban itself requires the government to issue has not been issued. So folks are really left in the dark, a lot of individuals in legal limbo, unclear how to proceed in their case. There's also some damning statistics that Senator Van Hollen has released and received through the Department of State that shows that the waiver process is, in fact, keeping people out, that it is less than 2% of individuals who are receiving these waivers, and former consular officers themselves have called the process completely fraudulent. So with this in mind, the lawsuit is focusing on requiring the government to abide by its own law and demanding transparency and a robust waiver process for our communities that now have no other route other than the waiver process to be with their families, study, contribute to our economy, and to receive life-saving medical care. Thank you. And Esther, I'll pass it back to you.
Thanks, Elika. I'll now turn it over to Paris Etemadi Scott, who is a managing attorney at one of our organizational plaintiffs, PARS Equality Center.
Esther, as a community-based nonprofit legal and social services organization serving the Iranian American community, PARS Equality Center is appearing as an organizational plaintiff asserting standing on its own behalf and on behalf of its severely affected clients. This is not about victory in court, nor is this a political stance. It's about family unity, pure and simple. It's about obtaining a waiver for a mother to visit her 35-year-old daughter in the U.S. with terminal brain cancer. It's about reuniting a U.S. citizen with his beloved Iranian wife after successfully completing consular processing. It's about being present at the birth of one's grandchild or attending a loved one's funeral. Parse Equality Center is the voice of thousands of Iranian Americans who demand that the government abides by the waiver provisions set forth in the proclamation. We demand that the government provide transparency and accountability to the waiver process that has so far been chaotic, opaque, and, in the words of Justice Breyer, nothing more than a mere window dressing. I'll pass it to you, Esther. Thank you.
Thanks, Paris. Now let's hear from Babak Yousafzadeh, who is the president of the Iranian American Bar Association.
Thank you, Esther. This is Babak Yousafzadeh. Sort of to pick up from where my colleagues have left off, for the reasons just stated, the implementation of the waiver process are of critical importance to individuals affected who at this point have no other means of reuniting with their families. But as alleged in our complaint, implementation of these waivers is so woefully inadequate and opaque that it doesn't meet even the most minimum legal or constitutional requirements to pass muster. For example, to satisfy these minimal requirements, you would expect to see for a similar process an established set of standards or guidelines on how to apply them, notice to applicants of those standards and how to apply for a waiver, a consistent process for submitting an application and supporting evidence, a meaningful process to consider the application or evidence under established standards, and ultimately you would expect to see a neutral third party who not only understands the standards, but has the discretion to actually apply them. What we have here is, at best, process that is so arbitrary and haphazard that it fails to meet even each and every one of the above requirements, and at worst, may be an intentional design to decline waivers entirely and implement a near-total ban. As alleged in our complaint, you'll see that despite the express instructions in the ban itself, there appear to be no clear guidelines or rules established by the Department of State regarding waivers. And to the extent there are, they conflict with what the proclamation says. Most applicants have no notice of waivers and how to apply for them. For example, there is no form. Many applied for their visas before waivers ever existed and were summarily denied after the waiver process came into existence, meaning they had no chance even to be aware of them, let alone to apply for them. And guidelines and standards are not publicly available, so individuals actually have no idea what it is they're supposed to do. Similarly, there's no process in place for accepting evidence in support of waivers. A minority of consular officers appear to accept evidence in writing. Others decline evidence in writing, but accept verbal evidence at the interview only, begging the question of what happens if the interview has already taken place. And other consular officers decline all evidence entirely. In fact, we have evidence that some consular officers have berated applicants for trying to submit evidence or hiring attorneys to help with this opaque process. Even where evidence is submitted, it's unclear if the consulates are considering them. Oftentimes, they don't even acknowledge their receipt, and it's unclear whether they are reviewing, and if they are, what standards they're applying. And finally, it's not at all clear whether consulates have the discretion or the authority to grant waivers. We've heard that some believe that they do, but we have evidence to reflect that others have said that only the Department of State can grant waivers, and yet other consular officers have stated that no waivers are available at all. And finally, obviously, there's evidence of some former government employees that have stated under oath that the process is a sham and that they were instructed to do everything they could to deny the waivers. We're confident that these facts will reveal that whatever process, if any, is in place, do not satisfy the minimum legal or constitutional requirements. And while all this is going on, individuals, as you've heard from my colleagues, are suffering the dire consequences. So this lawsuit is filed on behalf of our organizational plaintiffs and our individual plaintiffs, and on behalf of a class of similarly situated individuals, and seeks to hold the administration accountable to implement a good faith, lawful, and constitutional waiver process so that families who are suffering can qualify for waivers under the terms of the proclamation itself and actually receive the visas they've applied for. Among other relief that we're seeking is that the government issue guidance and standards to clarify and develop the waiver process for those otherwise permanently banned, to provide a meaningful process and opportunity to apply under lawful standards, including notice, opportunity to apply, meaningful consideration, and actual discretion by consular officers. And finally, we're also requesting, again, among other relief, that those who have been denied waivers under the former unlawful implementation to be reconsidered under a correct one. Back to you, Esther.
Thanks, Babak. Now let's hear from Roxana Neruzzi, who is the Deputy Director of the other of our organizational plaintiffs, One America.
Thank you so much, Esther. My name is Roxana Neruzzi, and I'm the Deputy Director of One America. We're an immigrant advocacy organization in Washington State, founded immediately after the 9/11 attacks to stand up precisely in moments like we find ourselves in today. Since day one of the Trump administration, Washington has been on the front lines fighting the Muslim travel ban. Today, we join this important lawsuit as a plaintiff to ensure that immigrants prevented from entering the United States under the travel ban can expect due process in applying for the hardship waiver. To date, the waiver has been a sham, and even Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer called the waiver window dressing to the overall ban to escape stricter judicial scrutiny. We're holding the president to his own words that individuals facing hardship that are not a threat to the United States and whose admission is in the nation's interest will get a fair chance. As so many have already emphasized, we must not forget the real stories of suffering and family separation driving this legal battle. As a first-generation Iranian-American, this issue hits very close to home. My family friend Seema, a trained chemical engineer, was awarded the diversity visa lottery 3 years ago after decades of waiting to leave Iran. She left everything she knew behind in hopes of a new life in the States and joined her U.S. citizen cousins and aunts in Seattle. She got a job at a local grocery store and has patiently waited to be reunited with her husband, who is earning his PhD abroad, a path she understood to be very straightforward at the time she made this decision. Her husband has now been inquiring about his interview status since he had submitted his visa application months ago. The couple now has to face the reality that the door is completely closed on any hopes Seema had for starting a family with her husband in the States. Seema not only left her family, friends, community, and career behind in Iran, but now she has been separated from her husband for nearly 2 years. She recently let me know that her husband has inquired about a waiver process and was left without any information around how to apply or what circumstances qualify him for the waiver. Others in her husband's situation have been told they qualify for the waiver, yet they still have to wait for an undetermined period of time and have received nothing in writing. This, again, demonstrates the ambiguity and complete lack of transparency around the waiver process. As an organization committed to building the power of immigrant refugee communities through organizing and civic engagement, we feel the impact of the racial and religious animus underneath the Muslim travel ban and the relentless restrictive policy changes under the current administration. We've had to shift our attention to addressing the family crisis facing our constituencies, even as the ban itself has had a chilling effect on members of our communities. What's at stake is our nation's commitment to fundamental humanitarian values, our standing in the world, and the lives of thousands of families like Seema, who are living in limbo without knowledge of how or when they may be reunited with their loved ones. While the Supreme Court did not fully consider the religious and racial animus inherent in the president's ban on travel, the proof of the administration's intent will be in how the government implements this waiver. Finally, we cannot give up fighting for justice through legal action, advocacy, and at the ballot box to resist this president's anti-immigrant, anti-family agenda. We must restore a political and constitutional consensus that legalizing discrimination must never be acceptable in a democracy founded on aspirational values of tolerance and equal justice. This means electing leaders that stand for equal justice at every level of government and engaging our communities so this story won't be repeated in future generations. Thank you.
Thanks, Roxana. And finally, our last speaker is Masih Fouladi, who is the Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations in Washington State.
Good morning, everyone. As you all know, last year, President Trump tried through four executive orders to deliver on his promise for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the country. People all over the country came together at airports, on the streets, and in our courtrooms to send a strong message that our, as Americans, as individuals who live in this country, we do not discriminate against one another based on the God that we pray to. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court upheld the presidential proclamation that led to the ban, despite the findings from every other court that the ban was likely unlawful. This decision was in part influenced by references in the proclamation to a waiver process that this lawsuit demonstrates to be a sham. Despite the ruling, the spirit of love, unity, and passion for the constitutional rights of our community members within the U.S. and those stranded abroad who are separated from their families stayed alive through the actions of nonprofit organizations on this lawsuit and community members throughout the country. We continue to gather in solidarity with people of all faiths, ethnicities, and national origins, despite constant attempts by this administration to separate us. And as we gathered on the streets after the Supreme Court ruling, we promised that we'd continue to strive toward American values that represent the diversity of our country. And this lawsuit is one big step in that direction. It demonstrates how U.S. citizens in Washington, from Seattle to SeaTac and Kent, and how individuals from across the country, from California to Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, and Florida, are being separated from their loved ones. This lawsuit clearly demonstrates how this administration is further disrupting an already broken immigration system and how they are creating different classes of citizens based off their white supremacy agenda. The Muslim ban has had other impacts on the Muslim community throughout the country. As we see, hate crimes and school bullying continue to increase on populations who are Muslim or appear to be Muslim. The ban is, again, another demonstration of this administration's Islamophobic agenda, and we must continue to fight on the courts, in the streets, to make it clear that we as a community, we as a country, will not stand for this injustice. Our message is clear. We will continue to work with people of all backgrounds to ensure that the United States continues to strive to be the best, its best self. We will continue to gather on the streets, meet with elected officials, and advocate in the courts until our communities receive the justice and equality they deserve. Our continued advocacy in the face of the Muslim ban is in the hopes to promote family unity throughout the country. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Bree, can you please give instructions for how to do Q&As, please?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. You can remove yourself from the question queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and one to ask a question. And we'll pause a moment to allow questions to queue. We will take our first question from Lily Fowler with Crosscut. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Two things. You mentioned the three kind of standards for getting a waiver, and one of them include that the person, that it's in the interest of the U.S. that this waiver be granted. How would somebody show that?
Alyssa, do you want to try and give a response to that?
Sure. That's a great question. Thank you. I think a lot of these terms are actually undefined. Without clear guidance, we don't actually know what the government means around undue hardship and certain pieces around national interest. So the only information we have about what qualifies for national interest was released to Senator Van Hollen from the Department of State through two letters that are public now, one on February 22nd and one on June 22nd. In terms of how someone can show they are in the interest of the U.S. to be entered, some information that was released through the Van Hollen letters is that, it would be beneficial to the family members here in the United States, or there may be, an economic interest, et cetera. But I think that part of the lawsuit, what we're getting at is how can one show that information when there is no process or mechanism to actually give evidence, answer those questions, and without a robust mechanism, it's really difficult to know how one can actually prove that they meet that third prong of the waiver requirements.
Okay, thank you. And then just one more thing. I take it that, since the Supreme Court has said that the Muslim ban can stand, or organizations like yours, are you guys just looking toward, as far as undoing the ban altogether, are you guys just looking toward the next administration to be able to do anything about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. This lawsuit focuses on the implementation of the ban and the fact that in and of itself is also unlawful, regardless of what the Supreme Court decision was. But certainly this is not a fight or an advocacy effort that's limited to the court. There are a number of different policy efforts to mitigate and also to ask for transparency around the waivers. As Roxana mentioned from One America, certainly efforts around the upcoming elections and going to the polls, as well as quite a number of community organizations and community leaders that have led different local actions and protests and organizing in their local geographies as well.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. We will take our next question from John Stang with Seattle Globalist. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Got about three or four questions. My questions are, in which court was the lawsuit filed, and is the lawsuit available anywhere online?
This is Esther Sung with the National Immigration Law Center. We are trying to make the lawsuit available online to answer your second question first. Because we noted it as an immigration-related action, the online filing system with the court has automatically sealed it, essentially, but we're trying to fix that to make it available. To answer your first question, we filed it in the Western District of Washington, the federal courthouse in Seattle.
Okay. Any particular reason why you're filing it in Washington State? Essentially, you're filing it in Seattle. And there are two Washington-related organizations among the people talking here. Why Washington State?
This is Esther again from the National Immigration Law Center. Lawsuits need to be filed in a venue where either a plaintiff or a defendant resides. And we have several plaintiffs who are residents of Seattle. They include our organizational plaintiff, One America, as well as several of our individual plaintiffs. And so we decided to file in Washington because we have that grouping of plaintiffs here in Seattle.
Is it possible to get a copy of the lawsuit emailed to me? Because usually when you file a lawsuit, they're not sealed.
Yes, we can do that. We can we can make that available. I'm not sure what the best way to do that is. Perhaps, Adela, if you can advise, if you're on the line.
Sure. Hi. Yep, this is Adela from I'm the communications director for the National Immigration Law Center. We'll make sure to email out the complaint as soon as this call is over. And if you need anything else, please feel free to email any of the groups on this call. But to get to me, you can email media@nilc.org.
N like yeah. Number, I, L, like Lima, C.
Okay. I'll email that after the phone call. And, again, coming back to Washington State, again, since I work for a Seattle-related news organization, do you have any statistics or numbers on, or even a feel for, how many immigrant families have tried to obtain waivers, or how many are being separated? Essentially, I'm trying to get some sort of numerical feel for the problem here in Washington State.
Sure. Let me try Roxana first. Roxana, do you have a guesstimate there?
I do not.
What about Massey?
Yes, this is Massey from CARE Washington State. We received over 100 calls following various iterations of the Muslim ban, and we've had several clients, including some recently, who have inquired about a waiver. So in addition to the individuals in this lawsuit, there have been more than 10 requests for help with waivers that we've come across in our office. And we do know that, unfortunately, one of the realities of the situation is many individuals do not know how to approach individuals and which organizations to approach regarding waivers. So we definitely think those numbers are just a small portion of what impact the community in Washington State and the Seattle area have faced.
Thank you very much.
If I may weigh in, this is Babak from President of the Iranian American Bar Association. I just wanted to echo what Leslie was saying, that we also have several additional reports of individuals specifically from Washington. We suspect this is probably the tip of the iceberg, as we don't, while we make efforts to go out and reach out into the communities to see who's been affected, and we try to maintain that data, what we have found is that data tends to be a slight fraction of what's actually out there. And we can say that there were several additional people from Washington State and some from Seattle area in particular that are not involved in this lawsuit.
Anyone else, or Dr. Chin, or thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Kanjarit Zonakajon. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. I wanted to ask, is this a class action lawsuit? And if you could repeat again, what kind of relief are you trying to call for, or what you're hoping to get out of the lawsuit?
Kira Babak, would you like to answer that question?
Sure. Happy to take a crack at it. To answer your first question, yes, it is a class action. The classes are specifically defined in the lawsuit itself. I'm happy to go over them if you'd like, but there are several different classes depending on sort of the facts involved surrounding the applicant for visa. In terms of the prayer for relief, there are several kinds, and again, they're outlined in detail in the complaint. But in sort of to group them together for purposes of simplicity, one, we're requesting that the government issue guidance and standards to clarify and develop a waiver process for individuals that are otherwise permanently banned. We are requesting sort of a meaningful process and opportunity to apply under those lawful standards. In other words, basically an opportunity for notice an opportunity to apply, to submit and have evidence accepted, and a meaningful consideration process by an individual who understands what the standards and guidance are and who has the discretion to make those decisions. And then as to individuals who were previously denied under the former unlawful process that was in place, to have those individuals reconsidered under the correct guidelines, standards, and process once they are implemented.
Got it. Thank you. And I also wanted to follow up and ask, there has been some information about the waivers that was released as a result of Senator Van Hollen. Are you working with any other members of Congress at all to put pressure on the Trump administration in regards to the waiver?
Baba, can you provide more information on that? Or?
Yes, I'm happy to. IABA has coalition partners, advocacy groups that are closely engaged in that process. The answer to your question is yes. They are working with other members of Congress, including senators and congressmen and women. However, the information as to, who they're speaking with directly is not publicly available.
Okay. Thank you.
And to add very quickly, the Council on American Islamic Relations nationally through our 35 offices has been continually advocating with Congressmen and women and senators throughout the country on various forms of litigation that would essentially defund any kind of implementation of the Muslim ban. Again, given the gridlock in Congress, that's likely isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon. But as we continue to work with community members on the ground with the upcoming election, we continue to emphasize that this is something that Congress could change if they were to get organized and started representing their constituencies the way that they should.
Yeah, and the last piece that I'll add is I believe that there are also a few efforts to add certain amendments that would require oversight of the implementation of the ban and reporting on numbers of waivers, et cetera. So I think that the implementation of it is being, fought both in the courts and through different policy efforts. And again, Senator Van Hollen is involved with proposing and pushing that amendment forward.
And that last speaker was Elika Vafai.
Thank you.
Do we have any more questions? I think that might have been the last question in the queue.
We do have one more that just queued up.
Okay.
Paul Shavosky with Bloomberg Bureau. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Paul, if you can hear me, please check your mute function.
Yeah. Hello, Esther. It's Paul Shakovsky. I'm hoping to speak with you after we get offline. I think you got my number there on the email.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Great.
Okay.
If there are no more questions to our presenters, does anybody have closing remarks that they'd like to make? Well, then, hearing none, thank you all so much for joining us. And if you have any further questions or need any more information, you can always email media@nilc.org, which is NILC.org for the National Immigration Law Center. Thank you.